This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. When you think of big investigative news stories in Illinois, what comes to mind? I'm talking about the kind of stories that lead to consequences, legislation maybe, or even criminal investigations. What about students being held in so-called seclusion rooms? That's one. More than a dozen World War II veterans dying of Legionnaire's disease at the Illinois Veterans Home in Quincy? How about the way the pesticide dicamba drifts away from its intended farm fields, destroying neighboring crops and natural areas? What those stories have in common is that they were the result of intensive effort, focused reporting projects by a mix of traditional and upstart news outlets, some commercial, some nonprofit. But as we've been discussing on the show, out-of-town owners are squeezing newspapers, forcing significant cost-cutting at local papers around Illinois. And when the cuts come, deeper investigations are some of the first stories to go. Those of us who see journalism as crucial to the health of our democracy, and not just investigative journalism, but daily reporting too, we're hoping that going non-for-profit might be a way to overcome the collapse of advertiser-supported, private equity-owned newspapers. As we continue asking who's in charge of the news this week, our next conversation deals with nonprofit news organizations focused on two areas that have seen significant disinvestment by traditional media in recent years: investigations and statehouse reporting. Joining us today, Brant Houston, professor and Knight Foundation chair in investigative and enterprise reporting at the University of Illinois. He co-founded the Institute for Nonprofit News, and in the Champaign-Urbana area, he oversees CU Citizen Access. Brant, welcome to The 21st.
Thanks very much for inviting me.
Also with us, Steve Mills, deputy Midwest editor at ProPublica. Before that, he had a long career at the Chicago Tribune. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
We're also talking with Jerry Nowicki, bureau chief for Capital News Illinois. Its statehouse news coverage appears in newspapers and news sites across Illinois, including most of the NPR member stations that carry this show. Jerry is on the job right now inside the Capitol as lawmakers are coming back for a session, so he's joining us by phone. Hello, Jerry. Thanks for being here.
Thanks. Good to talk to you again, Brian.
And listeners, we want to know, what do you think of investigative reporting or statehouse beat coverage you see in your local news? If you see it in your local news, you can join the conversation at 800-222-9455. Again, 800-222-9455. So first, Steve, I'm going to start with you and ProPublica. Maybe you can just talk in a general way. What sets investigative reporting apart from, you know, everyday beat reporting, street reporting?
Well, a lot of times investigative reporting actually takes its start from beat reporting, where reporters, you know what's happening at a building with a government office or something like that, and that's where the ideas come from. But the idea at ProPublica is to hold accountable governments or companies or individuals who have engaged in some sort of wrongdoing, often systemic wrongdoing. And so that requires a very deep dive into that activity to try to really understand it and then expose it. I mean, our guiding principle, our mission is really to do journalism with moral force. And so that's what we try to do with our stories.
Is that kind of reporting more expensive, or just expensive, period? How are you funded?
Well, we're a nonprofit, so we're funded by contributors, including a number of foundations and individuals. But the reporting is very expensive. Our reporters often work for months on stories. And so that might be, you know, half of their salary for the year. And then, obviously there are other resources that go into it, data reporters, travel perhaps. So it's very, very expensive, but it's worthwhile. It's money that is well spent to better understand, you know, some of the shortcomings in, you know, various government systems.
Brant Houston, can you tell us a little bit about CU Citizen Access? What does it cover? How has it helped fill the gap as newsrooms in central Illinois have cut back?
Well, it's a platform of the journalism department, a news platform primarily for students and alums. But with the diminishing of local coverage, we've done a lot of things like publicize restaurant inspections, which you had to do a Freedom of Information Act to get when I first got here. We look at neighborhood issues. When you lose a lot of reporters, you lose a lot of neighborhood coverage. So we do those kinds of things. We do a lot of data-driven stories. And we do a lot of Freedom of Information Act requests. For example, I've got a class that's asking for the salaries of a number of agencies, 22 agencies. And slowly but surely, we're finding out what we're paying our public employees, something that's not always easy to find.
That's interesting about the restaurant inspections. That's always a big I know when I worked at the State General Register in Springfield, it was always one of the most well-read columns, and it wasn't something people had to fight for. Some cities, I think in New York City, they just put stickers on the window with the grades, but you had to FOIA that?
Yeah, and eventually there was a website created by the Public Health Department, and there were placards that went on the windows of restaurants. And you're right, it was our most well-read stories. And like many nonprofits, we share all our content. So the local News Gazette would run the stories, too. We're having to revamp it because they've changed the way they do inspections. But we expect to keep going on that one. And a lot of stories that affect public health. We did a lot of COVID coverage.
This is just a total digression and sidebar. But listeners, if you are interested in public health coverage, do yourself a favor and look up on YouTube a Marvin Zindler rat and roach report. You will not be sorry. I digress, though. Let's get back on point. Brant, you're also associated with the Midwest Center for Investigative Reporting. It focuses more on agricultural news, among other things in the past, though. Can you talk about how you're reporting? How did the COVID-19 pandemic, what were you focusing on during that?
We're really focusing on agricultural workers, particularly in meat processing plants. And the reports did stellar reporting on the dangers and the way that COVID was spreading and the clusters. And I think it had a big impact in helping the public become aware of it and officials stepping in to push the corporations to get more protections for the workers. And it was a good project that showed that you can collaborate with what's left of legacy media. We collaborate with USA Today. They do have good investigative editors and reporters, and it was pretty spectacular work both in the region and across the nation.
All right, as some listeners might know, I covered the Illinois State House off and on in the 15 years before I began hosting the 21st. In that time, I witnessed the number of State House reporters drop. It was 27 when I started full-time to, I think at one point, we were down to 6. That number has rebounded a bit today. So far, though, we've been talking about investigative journalism, but that beat reporting is so crucial. As Steve mentioned earlier, you know, investigative ideas often come from the beat reporters who know what's going on day by day. So, Jerry Nowicki, can you talk about how Capital News Illinois is hoping to fill the gap of the shrinking State House press corps?
Yeah, essentially. So we started in January 2019, I believe, and the thought was just papers like the Southern Illinoisan, some of the Gannett, Gatehouse papers you talked about, they didn't have any State House correspondents, you said, down to 6 people. So it was really just the Illinois Press Foundation came up with this idea. It's partially funded by the Robert R. McCormick Foundation. And it was just, the thought was to get people here, get us in committee hearings, and just that steady drip of news that had been kind of shut off for newspapers who decided not to invest in the State House anymore for corporate reasons or whatever other reasons. And we just sort of turn that back on and give readers this sort of step-by-step process of what bills might come for a vote or what might not during any given legislative session.
And you mentioned that sort of foundation funding, right, from the Press Foundation, the McCormick Foundation. Is that why news outlets can run your stories for free? Maybe you can just talk about how it works. How many outlets are you in? How do people know if they're reading, you know, a journalist from the publication or from Capital News?
Yeah, so there's about 400, give or take, newspapers in the state of Illinois and radio stations as well that we send out the email to every day as to what we're covering. We don't charge for that. We just maintain the republishing rights. We have our own site, too, that you could access for free. And it's just that's kind of what it is, just to kind of get it out to everybody every day and just make sure it's there.
Yeah. All right. We're going to have to take a break here. So let me just remind listeners, you're listening to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about nonprofit news outlets and how they are rising up and attempting to fill some of the gaps left by the consolidation and cost cutting in traditional media, legacy media. Pick your poison there, but traditional TV, radio, and newspapers, particularly when it comes to investigative reporting and statehouse coverage. We're speaking with Jerry Nowicki, who's the bureau chief for Capital News Illinois, Steve Mills of ProPublica, and Brant Houston, who is a professor and night chair in investigative and enterprise reporting at the U of I, also runs CU Citizen Access. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. Listeners, we would love to hear from you. What do you think of how your local news outlets handle the statehouse? Do you get statehouse coverage in your local news outlets? What about TV, newspapers? We want to hear from you. How do they do investigative reporting? Is that something that you feel is going well in your community? Is it lacking in your community? 800-222-9455. Again, 800-222-9455. More to come on the 21st. Stay with us. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about nonprofit news organizations stepping in to fill coverage gaps, particularly in investigative and statehouse coverage in Illinois. We're speaking with Brant Houston, night chair and professor in investigative and enterprise reporting at U of I. Also, Steve Mills of ProPublica and Capital News Illinois Bureau Chief Jerry Nowicki. We'd love to hear from you, 800-222-9455. Again, that's 800-222-9455. So one of the stories I mentioned at the beginning of this conversation, an investigation that led to results, was in November 2019, ProPublica Illinois, or I should say what was then ProPublica Illinois, it's now just ProPublica, and the Chicago Tribune story about isolation rooms used in schools across the state. Back then, I spoke with reporter Jody Cohen about that on our show shortly after the story came out. Here she is describing the rooms where children were being put in what was essentially solitary confinement.
Many of them have blue padding that are in the rooms, and that is to, you know, it's for safety. If a child gets upset or angry and, you know, runs into the wall, or we saw children who were banging their heads on the walls or on the floors or on the doors. And so the padding was a safety measure, and we often saw the padding, typically blue, in these rooms. And right, there's no door inside the rooms, so there's no way for the child to get out.
All right, Steve Mills, you oversaw that effort at ProPublica. What does it take to report, edit, fact check, and publish a story like that?
Well, it takes a lot of time and a lot of resources. In that case, two reporters, our Jody Cohen and Jen Richards from the Tribune, had an idea to do this story. They had both learned of what was going on and wanted to work together. And so it was a very organic partnership. We brought two editors, Louise Kiernan, who was our editor in chief. The Tribune had two editors, Karen Tissue and George Papajohn. And together we worked on that story for, boy, I want to say 6 to 8 months, maybe longer. To put it together and to bring it out. And it was besides the two main reporters, as well as an additional reporter, Lakeidra Chavez, we had, I have to think, another half dozen or more people working on the story, in data, in visuals, in audience, just bringing that story out in a way that we could all be proud of, and that would have the impact that we were seeking.
What was the impact of that investigation?
Well, within 24 hours, Governor Pritzker said that the practice must stop. The legislature made changes to outlaw most of those practices, and they're being used far, far less than they ever were. So I think we brought real life changes for the children of Illinois with that story.
And that investigation was a result, as I mentioned, of a partnership between ProPublica and the Chicago Tribune. Brant, you mentioned earlier that the Midwest Center for Investigative Reporting has worked with USA Today and other news outlets. Can you talk about more about why collaboration with other media outlets, legacy media outlets, if you will, is key to the survival and reach of a nonprofit news organization like yours?
Well, there are a couple of things. One, in collaboration, when you've got reduced resources, you obviously can replace some of them by working with other people. And then what's happened with the nonprofit newsrooms that started up, and by the way, they were about 20 in 2009, and there are about 360 now in the U.S. What you had was a trade of content for distribution. And so that part of the collaboration has helped everyone. So you have all these small to large nonprofits producing great content, a lot of investigative reporting that legacy media maybe can't get to, but legacy media gets the content, and then the nonprofits get this amazing distribution that still exists.
And Jerry, what about, I want to ask you about Capital News Illinois again. I mean, as we mentioned before, your outlet stories appear in news outlets, newspapers across the state, radio stations as well. Do you see yourself as, you know, replacing what was in the press corps, or how do you see that?
Yeah, no, I don't think we could replace the number of reporters or the experience of reporters. So would we just, it was all about access for us. Just, you know, I mentioned the Southern Illinoisan before, but there were several other newspapers that just weren't able to run this type of content. So touching on the children in the seclusion rooms, now, once that became an issue at the General Assembly, because of that reporting, we followed those hearings. I think it was Representative Jonathan Carroll. He said he'd been in those rooms as a child, and we were able to share those stories and continue on that sort of arc that was started by the investigative reporting. So that's the type of stuff we pick up, and then it's widely available then to newspapers. Pick an area of the state, and we're probably published in a newspaper in that area. So, you know, I don't think we're replacing anybody, and certainly I don't think we want to make a paper's job easier, not to hire someone, but I think we just want to make sure that when it comes to the State House, those papers do have access to that type of coverage.
Brant, I want to ask you, as somebody who's looked at nonprofit news more broadly, one of the things I've heard from people, I think I actually heard former Illinois Senate President John Cullerton make this argument at one point, is that it's great to have these investigative, you know, reporting organizations like ProPublica, like the Midwest Center, but there's still that gap in beat reporting. And I know that there are some organizations, Block Club in Chicago is a nonprofit news organization, but I've heard from people they question whether that can scale to a community the size of Champaign-Urbana or Springfield or Peoria or Rockford. What do you think about that? Is there an opportunity for a nonprofit, a membership supported, if you will, without, you know, big help from the McCormick Foundation, that sort of thing, in a smaller city?
I think so. I think people have realized more and more the terrible state that local news is in. And so you're getting more community support, subscriptions, Block Club Chicago, but you're also getting community leaders getting behind the new nonprofits. One just started up in Omaha. There's been one in Fort Worth, Roanoke, Virginia. I think they're going to scale up. And quite frankly, if you have a nonprofit with 7 reporters in, say, a community like Champaign, you've just doubled the amount of print reporters that we have. So that's really important. The other part is that there was a lot of news that we kept doing, and I was in a legacy newsroom, that was no longer needed as we became more digital. So, you know, none of us is trying to replace everything that used to be there. We're trying to replace or revive or reinvent what's really needed for people to know how decisions are made and how their tax money is being spent and what the dangers are in a community.
Somebody who is an A&E reporter, I always get a little nervous when people say news we don't need. But yeah, no, I hear what you're saying.
Oh, we need A&E. There's no question about that. We need some relief.
All right. Let me take one more opportunity to remind listeners this is the 21st. We are talking about nonprofit news outlets rising up to fill the gaps in investigative and statehouse coverage, in particular, left by shrinking and consolidation in traditional media. We're speaking with Brant Houston, Knight Chair and Professor in Investigative and Enterprise Reporting at the U of I, Jerry Nowicki, Bureau Chief of Capital News Illinois, the statehouse bureau there, and Steve Mills of ProPublica. And Steve, in a moment, I'm going to introduce one of your colleagues who and talk about some of the work that you all are working on there. But first, I do want to ask, people often turn to investigative journalists to help get answers. Maybe they've hit a wall with the government, their local government. How does someone who needs help approach a media outlet, ProPublica in particular, right? What information is helpful to bring to reporters?
Well, we have a suggestions tab on our site, and you know, people can write into us, and we get, you know, can't even imagine how many we get every day, you know, tips and story ideas. You can reach out to us directly. I have people writing to me with ideas for stories we should pursue. You know, what we're looking for are solid ideas that, you know, potentially reveal systemic failures by society at some point. And, you know, we can take it from there often.
All right, let me bring in one more voice to this conversation. Tony Briscoe has been reporting a story in ProPublica about the all-black farming community of Pembroke Township in Kankakee County. Tony, welcome to the 21st. Can you tell us what's happening there?
Sure. Thank you for having me. This was a really nuanced and layered story, really about a black farming community in the Midwest, of which there are not that many left, that really had seen a lot of disinvestment and a lack of resources and financial hardships there. And over the years, as more and more farmers in Pembroke Township had lost land, you know, outsiders had purchased more and more. And so it was this kind of sad story. And it really kind of came on my radar once, you know, Governor J.B. Pritzker and his administration went to visit and said, hey, something needs to be done about stemming the loss of Black-owned farmland. Well, come to find out, there was actually quite a bit of conservationists, including charitable organizations like the Nature Conservancy, which is kind of this white cap organization known for protecting, you know, globally endangered habitat. They wanted to buy, you know, a lot of this community for nature sanctuaries, which is outwardly, right, like, you know, it's seemingly a good idea, right? But, you know, it, in fact, we, in talking with these folks, and locals, they felt really marginalized over this amount of time in the way that the Nature Conservancy and others were buying this land at tax sales, which felt, you know, predatory. And also some of the tactics that they were using, imposing permanent land restrictions that cut against the grain of, you know, local traditions, and also them, you know, reducing their tax obligation on some of this land as well.
And so ultimately you have a black farming community, some of whom have been there for generations, sort of butting heads with white conservationists, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, this was really a story about kind of community control and, you know, a really endangered group themselves, which is black farmers. I mean, if you look at Illinois as a whole, you know, there's 27 million acres of farmland in the state. And only, well, less than 19,000 belongs to black farmers. And this is one of those few strongholds. This is a community that traces their roots back to the Underground Railroad and was founded by formerly enslaved people. So, you know, they really found from their origins this, you know, sense of freedom, of rural independence and sovereignty there. And they felt like that was... being threatened by outsiders, you know, these organizations, including the Nature Conservancy and others, didn't live in the community, and they were imposing these land restrictions that, you know, prohibited horseback riding, the collection of wild herbs and berries, just very simple pleasures that, you know, folks really held dear and was a part of their local way of life. And, you know, I think that was very hard for them to witness over the course of some 20 odd years. They've, you know, voiced their resistance And yet, at the same time, these plans to buy thousands of acres in this small town continued.
All right. Tony Briscoe is reporting that story for ProPublica, and it's an example of some of the many nonprofit news organizations that are rising up, attempting to fill the gap in, as we've been talking about, investigative and statehouse coverage, but you can also find them trying to fill those gaps in local news coverage. I mentioned a couple of examples earlier. We will have links to the organizations news sites we discussed, ProPublica, the Midwest Center for Investigative Reporting, and Capital News Illinois on our website. For now, I want to thank my guests, Tony Briscoe and Steve Mills of ProPublica, Jerry Nowicki of Capital News Illinois, and Brant Houston of the Midwest Center for Investigative Reporting, also professor in night chair in investigative reporting at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Thank you all so much for being with us here today on the 21st.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that is all the time we have for our program today. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with a state lawmaker and others who are behind a new effort, a task force aimed at seeing what can be done from a state standpoint of boosting local journalism in Illinois. We'll ask why he thinks that might be the way to go here. Plus, we're going to talk about how location affects the kind of political news you might receive. We'll talk to a journalist turned professor and author who has studied this in depth. And we're going to talk about the last two presidential elections and what's ahead. That's coming up on tomorrow's show as we continue our week-long of coverage, Who is in Charge of the News? The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.